Nacholand Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcioland Podcast. This is also technically episode 420. If you're into that sort of thing, I hope you're enjoying this show and you're enhancing it at your end. So today we have a fun show. I've been wanting to talk about Fiorentina for a while, so we have a great first-time guest. Massimo Basile, who is a journalist based in New York, but he's obviously from Italy, covers Calcio, Corriere dello Sport, and also politics and culture on La Repubblica. We didn't talk politics and culture, but plenty on Fiorentina, so that's towards the end of the pod. You'll hear my thoughts on the Sopranos revival right before we get to the weekend. And of course, we have a part of the podcast for our patrons. But at the top, there's a couple of things I want to talk with Alex. A lot's been made about Donnarumma's not very warm reception at San Siro with Italy. So we'll get into that. And also the news on Fiorentina announcing that Vlahovic will be leaving eventually. But Alex, let's start with Donnarumma. I always like getting your opinion on this because you're not so much in the bubble like me. So I think you can offer a different perspective on it. So I want to get your take on the reception Donnarumma had at San Siro. It was his first game back since leaving Milan on a Bosman. So I want to ask you this. A, what was your reaction to him being jeered really mercilessly? And do you think he maybe should have gotten a little bit of a pass because he was playing there with Italy, wasn't playing there with PSG? And I would add that he was playing there with Italy after being such a huge part of winning the Euro. Do you think that should have maybe curbed a little bit the reception that he received?
It's a good question, David, because, yeah, those are two completely different things. Winning the Euros is a very positive thing, really, for any Italian fan. And then leaving Milan, et cetera, and also just being a rival of all the other fan bases, that's more of a negative thing in the fan, so to speak. Not really Donnarumma's fault, but a negative thing in the fans' eyes. So I understand why he'd be cheered and be booed. But honestly, do I think he should have been more cheered because of the win with Italy in the Euros? Yes. Yes, absolutely. Because that's something that lasts forever. That's a huge achievement. They brought a lot of joy, the Azzurri, to so many people in Italy. And this has been a difficult time for so many people. So I feel like for that month, they really gave a lot of extra happiness. It might sound overdramatic, but they really did give a lot of extra happiness to the people of Italy. And Donnarumma was a massive reason behind that. So yes, David, I think he probably should have gotten more of a pass. But, it's sports. It's sports. This is what we do. We boo if we think there's any reason to boo. We do. And you know what? I don't want to be such a softy. I've already answered it in my opinion. Yeah, I think he should have been definitely more cheered than booed. And really, because of the Euros win, technically, yes, I think that should have resulted in a much more positive sound. But, okay, great, Alex. It's sports. This is the beauty of sports, is fans go with their emotions in that moment. And that's what makes the sport, especially from a fandom perspective, not robotic at all. I mean, I just want to quickly parallel it to a different sport. Tom Brady last week, I don't need to really tell many people who Tom Brady is, whether you like the NFL or not. Greatest NFL player of all time, okay? He returns to New England after 20 years of playing there. He's a god. He's the most beloved image right now in sports in New England. And when he took the field, David, cheered. When he took the field, when they first saw him that night, cheered. Really loud. Really, really loud. Then when he took the field when the game started, once the game was getting going, booed. So the fans were like, yep, welcome back. Thank you. That was the cheering. Then once it was game time, boo. And I know this is not the exact parallel to Donnarumma, but what I'm trying to profile is, fans, there are no rules. There are no rules. Now, don't cross the line. We know this. We know what types of negative fan reactions we don't like, and that's just the obvious abuse of all different kinds. But other than that, There are no rules to being a fan. So, David, I guess I'm kind of splitting my answer down the middle in saying, yes, I do think Donnarumma should have gotten a more positive reception. But honestly, I don't even care about my answer because it's sports. And I really don't mind if fans, as long as they don't cross the line, boo or cheer. Especially when I guess there is a reason to boo. It's just not that serious of one in my eyes. And that's Donnarumma leaving how he did, etc. So a little bit of both, David. What about you?
Yeah, I like your perspective. So here's a couple of things. I have a lot of thoughts, too. There's been a lot of parallels being made in the Italian media with other situations, which we'll get into in a second. But I'll just say this. I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, you know, fans, you know, that's part of being a fan. And I think by definition, being a fan and a super fan is a visceral experience. It's just something you feel in your gut. It's not particularly rational. Fan is short for fanatic, and I think that it's not a coincidence that that's the game. So I think, you know, you have a visceral reaction to things. So yeah, sure. Would have this reception been better, and I put this in air quotes, had this been a PSG game and he comes back, the club he joined, left on a Bosman and all, sure. I get the whole Italy thing, but at the same time, you know, you're a fan, you paid a ticket. It so happened that this game was going to take place at San Siro, Milan's stadium. This was decided, you know, 10 months ago, well before at least most of us knew that Donnarumma was going to leave. So it was kind of a unfortunate coincidence if you're a Donnarumma guy. Maybe if you're a Milan fan who's pretty upset with the way he left, you don't think it's an unfortunate you know, coincidence. But I will say this, you know, there's a visceral reaction to it. So I have a couple of other thoughts. First off, what bothered me wasn't really the Donnarumma stuff. Was it maybe more aggressive than maybe I would have expected? Sure. But what really bothered me was the booing of the Spanish national anthem. And I really do believe that probably wouldn't have happened if there wasn't this environment of people going there to boo Donnarumma. So I don't have a problem with the boos for Donnarumma. And I think you said it really well, Alex. If you don't cross the line, that's fine. But I do think that negative energy ultimately just feeds more negative energy. And if you're in the mindset, oh, I'm here to let Donnarumma know how upset we are with how ungrateful he was with the way he left. And I think most Milan fans, it's not so much the fact that he left, it's how he left that people are upset with. But so, you know, there's that. But I do think if you go there with that mindset, oh, I'm going to show him, it then becomes a lot easier to then slip into the negative thing. Because I really do think in life, a lot of times things are gradual and you just progress to the most negative aspect. The other thing, you know, that I saw in the Italian media, and this was really, really unfortunate, is I saw, you know, the Donnarumma reception compared to the racist stuff that Koulibaly went through. And that to me is very, very offensive. Look, I'm not a person of color. I'm not someone who's been insulted in that way. So I can't fully understand what that feels like. But what Donnarumma did was a choice. And I think, you know, in life, for actions, there are reactions. He made this choice to leave and leave on a Bosman with Milan getting nothing after they made him a starter at 16, made him one of the highest paid players at his position at the age of 20, on and on down the line. So I get that. That's appropriate. That was his decision. But Koulibaly, he was born this way. And being insulted for being just the way you're born is really, really different. So I, to be honest, that was the thing that bothered me the most, was that. The other thing that stood out to me is, you know, to me, this was a lot of a protest on Donnarumma. But I really think in general, this is also a little bit of a reaction to what we're seeing a lot in football. And, you know, this week we had the news on Newcastle. Like, it to me, it really feels like, and COVID was part of it, but like we've really entered a new phase where money and all in football, and it's always been part of the game, don't get me wrong, I don't want to sound naive and say, oh, you know, this is the first time now, but we've kind of really gone into a whole new realm. So maybe I'm being romanticizing a little bit the protest on Donnarumma, but I think there's certainly a lot of that. And the other thing that I will say, though, is to me, ultimately in life, when you have a situation like Donnarumma's, the best revenge is living well. That's, to me, is the best revenge. If someone wronged you, did something wrong to you, sure, okay, you can insult them, do all that. You know, you might get a little endorphin rush, but ultimately, you know, I don't know how great you're going to feel about it. But what does make you feel great is living well and moving on. And I, you know, we've talked a lot about it on the podcast. Like, Milan just keeps winning every narrative this season. So Donnarumma returns, but Maignan's been superb at Milan. I don't think right now we could make the case at all that Milan would be any better if Donnarumma was there instead of Maignan. And I don't know, you know, for me, I don't know Maignan enough to say, oh, he's definitely going to be as good as Donnarumma. But what is certainly evident is that Maignan at a salary that is basically less than half what Donnarumma was making, you're getting better value there. So living well, to me, is ultimately the best revenge. Though before we move on from this, the last thing I want to say is what's really incredible. The other aspect that's pretty incredible about this, I saw ESPN tweeted this, that game against Spain was the first time that Donnarumma conceded two goals as a starter for Italy. And you might say, oh, Donnarumma is really young, but he's been kind of starting and playing a lot for Italy for 5 years. And this was the first time he gave up two goals. And I will say, sure, I'm sure the protest impacted him a little bit, and he almost had a big mistake that would have really, really embarrassed him. But Italy didn't lose this game. They didn't end the 37-game streak because of the protest, the Milan fans. They just said because Spain was flat out better in that game. And I think another thing that would be good is if once in a while we kind of just gave credit to the opponent instead of always looking for a reason why our team fell short. Sometimes it's just okay to say, okay, the other team was better, and that's that. So also this whole thing of saying, oh, Milan fans cost Italy their undefeated streak, I think that's really a little bit far-fetched. So yeah, look, again, fans have a visceral experience. I don't have a problem with the boost to Donnarumma. The last thing I'll say, I was trying to think, you know, kind of what would be a little bit the equivalent for me, and probably the closest would be is if I went to a Celtics game where Kyrie is coming back as an opponent, I'm sure I would boo, and I'm sure I wouldn't be the only one in the stands there. But I would try not to cross that line because, again, I really do think negative energy only breeds more negative energy. But at the end of the day, Donnarumma made his choice, and for every action, there's a reaction.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, I'll boo Kyrie any day of the week. Anyway, moving on. David, let's transition a little bit here. I want to ask in this opening segment, were you surprised that Comiso announced publicly that Vlahovic wouldn't extend his contract at Fiorentina?
So I saw a lot of reactions to this. And interestingly, I was even doing a show in Italy with Moggi the other day, and we were talking about this. And Moggi was like, oh, I can't believe he's like, I like Comiso. I think he's a great president, but I can't believe that he's doing it when he has a year and a half left on the contract. He's kind of shooting himself in the foot. But I don't see it that way. We've actually been talking a lot about this on the podcast, how players just have much more power. And the closer you get to the contract expiring, the more leverage they have. And we've talked about how now, in my opinion, teams have to decide when there's 2 years left on a player that they want to keep, that you have to take action. You have to like figure out with the player, okay, what are we going to do here? Are you going to extend? If you're not going to extend, let's figure something out that works out for everyone. That was the approach Inter took with Lautaro. And I think we're going to see more and more teams doing that. So Comiso announcing it publicly, I have a couple of thoughts. First off, Comiso does love the attention and making things about him. And I don't say that necessarily in a bad way. And he's always said, look, I'm going to be always very honest with Fiorentina fans and tell you how things are going and not sell you a bill of goods. So I respect that aspect, and I think there's part of it. But I do think this is Comiso trying to get some leverage as well. I think the worst case scenario for Fiorentina is Vlahovic going to Juve, because then you have Chiesa and Vlahovic kind of being the two young stars that Juve is building around. from Fiorentina. If you know anything about Fiorentina, you know how much they despise Juve there. So I took it as Comiso trying to put, you know, try to have some control on where he goes. There's been some reports, and not from Gianluca and Fabrizio, but others that say that Juve has been in a lot of touch with his agent, with Vlahovic's agent, and that is kind of what drove this statement. I would imagine there's certainly something to that. But I think Comiso saying, okay, we're open to selling Vlahovic, maybe even in January. That way we can get a return, a really good return still, with a little bit more than a year left, and at least have some control on where he goes. So I took it as that. Was it surprising? Yeah. But guess what? I do think we're going to start seeing this more, because with players just having so much more leverage the closer their deal is set to expire, I think this is the time frame you are going to see teams going for. So, guys, unfortunately, we don't have Calcio this weekend, so we don't have 1,000 names on deck, but we do have a great guest, and then we're going to close on Sopranos. Before we get to all that, we are, of course, going to do a part of the podcast for our patrons. If you enjoy Calcio Land, consider becoming a patron. We'll answer all your questions. You'll join a great community. And, you know, we have a podcast on Tuesday, and next week we'll have the great Napoli Outsider back on. Okay, guys, I am very excited to welcome the next guest. And one of the reasons why I'm very excited is it's been a long time since we've had a first-time guest on the pod. We've been going back to the well with a lot of our classic guests, but I wanted to switch it up a little bit, especially because we wanted to talk about Fiorentina, which we haven't done in a while, and I kind of had an ace up my sleeve. I met our next guest, Massimo Basile, in New York. I think it was May, at an event with our friends from Italian Football TV. We hit it off. We talked about Fiorentina. I compared the current president at owner at Fiorentina to former U.S. president, and there we hit it off really good. So Massimo is an Italian journalist who is based in New York. He's been in New York for quite some time, and he's been a journalist since the mid-80s. He's reported on three World Cups, three Euros, and he's been in the U.S. since 2018 for Calcio. He works over at Corriere dello Sport, one of the biggest newspapers websites in Italy, and for Politics Economy, he writes for La Repubblica, which is right up there as one of the biggest papers in Italy. They recently hired my friend Paolo Condò, so it's a great, great place. So I'm very excited to chat with Massimo about Fiorentina. So my good friend, after that long intro, benvenuto to Calcio Land.
Thank you, David. It's a pleasure.
Awesome. So let's talk about Fiorentina, a team that's near and dear to your heart. So I know going into the break, there was the loss to Napoli. I thought it was a really good game, but I think this was a really, really exciting start for Fiorentina. So let me ask you this. What grade would you give them? You can go the Italian style, 0 to 10. You can go the American style, 8F. But what grade would you give the Viola so far?
Oh, look, David, I'll give you two grades, if possible, in Anglo-Saxon way. Now, B+, for what we have seen on the pitch, because Fiorentina plays very well, even if they play half a game, you know, but I really love what I've seen. And C- for the drama out of the ground, because you have bad communication, a sense of perennial fight, the urgency of fighting an enemy every day. I mean, agents, politicians, media. And so I think that Mr. Comiso is investing plenty in the club, millions, I mean, but Viola Park is a fantastic project. But he keeps showing a lack of experience in there with so many components of football.
Yeah, there's a lot to like about what Comiso has done, his enthusiasm. But yeah, Italy is definitely very different than where you are based now. So
yes.
Good explanation there. So, you know, what's interesting to me is when Fiorentina hired Gattuso, which feels like a million years ago now, I actually thought it was a good hire. I thought he was by far the best manager that Commisso had under him. And then, you know, things went south pretty quickly. But what was your initial reaction to Fiorentina hiring Gattuso?
Well, the excitement was big, but short-lived. Gattuso would have been the perfect one if Fiorentina wanted to grow faster and raise the bar. But they should have changed 6-7 players of the starting 11. For me, it was too much, I think. It doesn't take a genius to figure out that Fiorentina should have changed a lot in order to come back to his golden past. So that's the story had ended up very soon, unfortunately.
Yeah, I agree. But I have to say, in a weird way, things worked out well for Fiorentina. So they bring in Italiano, who I think philosophy-wise with Calcio is very different from Gattuso. And I have to say, I'm kind of surprised at how quickly Italiano put his stamp on the team. And I think you raised an important point that to play the style Gattuso wanted to do, they probably had to change the team a lot. And maybe Italiano had more to work with. So do you agree with that? And are you surprised by how well they're doing under a manager that came in, you know, pretty late in the summer?
Oh, yeah. Sincerely, I say yes. Yeah, I say yes because it's a very amazing story for all of us, because Italiano is a good coach, you know, but he's doing very well. Three things I think that have helped him to change Fiorentina in so little time, because I mean his strong ideas, the fans coming back to the stadium, and the will of the whole team to leave a dark and frustrating period made with poor football, bad scores, and the general sadness in the last two seasons, you know.
So what do you think the ceiling is for this Fiorentina? Because when I look at the landscape in Serie A, I don't think there's really a dominant team, but there's quite a few pretty good teams. And I'm not sure if Fiorentina, all things being equal, is comparable. But the way they're playing is definitely pretty inspiring. So what do you think their ceiling is this season for position in the standings? Like Commisso has always said, you know, he wants to get to the left-hand side of the standings, so be in the top 10. That seems pretty attainable. Do you think Fiorentina can be even better than that?
Yeah, left side of the standings for sure. But, you know, this is a very difficult question, you know, at this part of the season. What I can say at the moment is that I think that Fiorentina will keep playing well until January, I mean. Then probably they'll have a little decline because we are talking about heavy rains, frozen, low grounds. Let's say 2 months more or less, and then they'll come back in the last part of the season. I think they'll finish in 8th position in the standings. But this is my prediction, but I'm not very good at that.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about Commisso. I know you're very familiar with him. And look, I love his enthusiasm. You mentioned at the top, he's done a lot of really good things. He spent a lot of money, not just on the squad, on the training ground. He's very enthusiastic with the stadium. But look, you know, Italian bureaucracy is as tough as like playing against the BBC at a Juve. So on his side, do you think he really understood what he was getting himself into at Fiorentina and Serie A as a whole? Do you think he has any regrets? And do you see him eventually succeeding in the Italian football landscape?
Look, I think that Commisso regrets not building the new stadium because he's an investor. He's a billionaire. So he wants to make money as he did all his life. You can change a mind of a man at 70. And I think this is right. Probably he underestimated his challenge. He thought that bringing in money and some passion would have been enough to lead the city. He thought that being an old tifoso would have been enough to surf over the Italian wave, but definitely he didn't expect so many critics. a very different approach from the fans in respect of the American system that is more similar to an entertainment. It's different from the Italian model. Yeah, the American system, you know. In Italy, culture is a constant war. Italy culture is a constant war. Yeah. A perennial fight. Yeah, a struggle, a perennial fight. And being surprised by this confirms, in my opinion, that my sensation that Mr. Commisso didn't know the culture. And he decided not to have an international management like the one that Friedkin chose for AC Rome. And so this is the result. Yeah, but I see some difference between the two models.
For sure, for sure. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Vlahovic, who's been the big story this week. So Commisso came out publicly at the beginning of the week saying, look, we did all we could. We're going to make him the highest paid player ever, but we're just not reaching an agreement. So I think he's putting it out there that he's leaving. I think he's strategically trying to do all he can to have some control on where Vlahovic goes. But that's neither here nor there. But you've watched him a lot. I think he's a great striker. There's a lot of good number nines in Italy right now in Serie A. That's one thing we are not lacking. But do you see Vlahovic being able to be the main striker on a top team in the next few years?
Efes is a really a good player. I saw him playing for the first time in person 2 years ago during the Fiorentina's tournament in the United States with the International Champions Cup. And he showed to be a leader, to look older than his age. But please, no comparison with Haaland, you know, because everybody's talking about Haaland, the Borussia Dortmund striker, is already top level. But at the same time, I think that Dusan can improve on a top team. See how Federico Chiesa improved on Juventus. So I think that he's going to grow better and to become a very international striker.
Are you surprised at how good Chiesa has become? I have to say I really am. I mean, at Fiorentina, he was just really so disinterested by the end. It's like night and day now. But I got to say, even beyond his drive, I'm just surprised at just how flat out good he is. Are you surprised that he's turned into such a great player?
No, because Chiesa is he has less talent respect of Vlahovic, but he has is very strong, meaning his attitude, his mind. Yeah, it's very strong. Federico Chiesa was born as a Juventus player because he has the Juventus soul, the will to fight. The will to fight and to have more, to win more. And you see him playing with the Juventus jersey, you see that it looks like it was at the Juventus since a long time because he is a Juventus man.
For sure. All right, back to Fiorentina. I was curious. I wanted to get your take on that. One thing that I've heard, and it does make sense to me, is that when Vlahovic leaves, assuming Italiano's still there, I think there is a case to be made that with his style of play, you don't need an incredibly talented striker like Vlahovic. You could probably get away with like a middle-of-the-road striker. The goals would come still. Do you agree with that assessment? Would you be more worried of losing a great striker like that if, say, you had a more defensive-minded coach?
Yeah, this is a good point. But probably, at the moment, I can say that Italiano style of play can help a transition to another play, but it needs a strong forward as well, not conquering I guess. But, you know, now, win or lose, his team is going to attack more, have the ball in their attacking third. So you need a strong striker. But respect to the past, we have not only a strong striker, but we have a style of play. And this is much, much more important.
Sure. Okay, there's two other players I want to ask you about. I was really impressed with Martinez Quarta almost right away since he arrived in Italy. I know Fiorentina spent pretty considerable amount of money to bring him in. I like that he's got grinta, also has pretty good feet. I think he's been Fiorentina's best defender since he's been there. What do you make of him? And do you agree that he's maybe one of the more underrated defenders in Serie A right now?
I love hearing you saying this because you are a big expert, really. And I love so much Martinez Quarta. I love his way of playing because he has personality, strongness, some craziness, you know. But don't forget that he's from Argentina. And the guys coming from there need 1 year to adapt to our football. When Walter Adrian Samuel, you remember, came to AC Roma, just to give an example, it took 6 months before showing his talent. And Quarta is not Samuel, of course, but I consider him a very strong piece of the team. Very important players. Yeah, I love it.
For sure. Yeah, I have to say, you know, when a lot of teams were trying to get Milenkovic, I was like, I'm sure Fiorentina fans are pretty happy because the one I would try to get is Quarta, for sure. Let's talk about Bonaventura, who I think has had a resurgence because last season, Fiorentina, granted, they were Bosman deals, but they were big salaries. They signed Bonaventura and Callejon. They barely got anything at all. From last season, Callejon's been okay, but I think Bonaventura's been really, really good, energized by Italiano. Are you surprised by this? Did you think Bonaventura still had this in him?
Look, with Beppe Iacchini, the former coach last season, it was very hard for everybody playing well. They had the ideas, the project, nobody ran without the ball, but Bonaventura showed some talent. Don't forget that he played for AC Milan at the top level. Now he's confirming for me his skills. He's the best midfielder, active in the attack as well as in defense. He pops up with moments of brilliance. Look, I don't expect he's going to play at that level for all the season because the Italiano style of play drains energies. But now it is exciting to see him playing. For sure.
Absolutely. Okay, so those were the ones that stood out to me. Are there other Fiorentina players that this season surprised you? It can be good and bad, but maybe more on the positive side. Any other Fiorentina players you think deserve a shout out?
I hope to see again the old Gaetano Castrovilli playing as he did with Vincenzo Montella in 2019. It was very impressive, if you remember, because of his speed, versatility, dribbling skill, on pass, a sort of awareness of space. Is the player able to drive forward? I mean, he could have a dynamic role as left-sided midfielder. And that's the kind of guy Fiorentina need at this moment. And I hope he's going to be that kind of player.
Awesome. So let's close on this. And I really appreciate your insight on Fiorentina. This is a question I've been asking all of our recent guests because Serie A really does feel especially wide open this season. I feel like almost every top team, you know, has a flaw. But if you had to pick now on October 7th, the team that you think has the best chance to win the Scudetto, who is it and why?
But for me, Inter remains the favorite because of his roster. Is the favorite for to win the Scudetto. But I see Juventus coming back strongly in the second part of the season. Never, never underestimate La Vecchia Signora. I think that we could see an incredibly open title race.
Awesome. Well, Massimo, I can't thank you enough for doing it. It was great having you on. Definitely everyone, those of you read in Italian, check out Massimo's awesome work on Repubblica Corriere dello Sport. Always tweets really awesome stuff as well. And I look forward to chatting with you again about calcio during the season and hopefully meeting up in person again. I had a great time when we met in New York.
Thank you for having me, David.
Okay, guys, before I let you go, I just wanted to close the show talking a little bit about Sopranos. I've been taking a deep dive with the prequel coming out. We talked about the prequel on our Patreon episode Tuesday. I liked it. I thought it was good. I thought, unfortunately, they were trying to jam-pack way too much into a two-hour movie. Chase really wanted to make a movie 2 hours, not longer. But that easily could have been a mini series, and I thought the casting was really, really excellent. Kudos to Vera Farmiga, who I thought was outstanding as Olivia Soprano. But that prequel made me like take a deep dive again on the show, and I find it very interesting that now I'm looking at the show with very different eyes. I would say every 5 years or so, I try to watch, you know, a few episodes, kind of remind myself why it's so great. And I think with The Wire, it's the greatest TV show ever made. But to me, Sopranos now is really kind of taking a different meaning. And I think that's when art is really, really great art, you do see that it kind of evolves with time. And I know there's a lot of younger people that are getting into Sopranos now that were too young, or some not born at all when it first debuted. And I'm fascinated with how younger people are looking at it. You know, in the first episode ever of Soprano, Tony, when he meets with Dr. Melfi, his shrink, one of the first things that he says is that he feels like he joined the mob when it was on the decline. And he kind of felt depressed because he felt he was joining something that was on their way down. And I think that's how so many young people feel about society. Like, I'm 44, and you know, I feel like maybe my generation is maybe the last one that had it better than their parents. And maybe that's not even true. Maybe boomers was really the peak. Like, my mother's in her 70s. Maybe she lived through the best era in America and all. But now things are very different. And you know, what's interesting to me is that although the mob hardly even really exists here in the U.S. anymore, yeah, there's a little bit about it. If you think about it, I feel like the corporate world has taken on a ton of mob tactics. I think in Sopranos, they do talk about this a little bit more. They visit Starbucks both in the first season and one towards the end. And I think Chase is kind of hinting at that. Like, let me give you an example. Like, in Sopranos, you see a lot of the revenue that they make comes from betting, like parlays, people just betting on a game, and Paulie Walnuts, you know, taking bets and trying to get enough bets on both sides. Nowadays, if you live in the U.S., you can just download FanDuel and have all sorts of bets, some that you would have never even imagined in the past. So there's that. We're seeing corporations really become very, very aggressive to maintain market share. So now when I watch The Sopranos, that's really what stands out to me, is how much things have changed. So if you haven't watched it, definitely check it out. I don't think it makes sense to kind of watch that prequel. Like, you could watch that movie and kind of see it as an old school mob movie, but you just gain so much more watching the show. And it's just incredibly brilliant. And if you're someone who hasn't watched it in a long time, I'd be very curious to get your thoughts. Check it out and see if you look at it with a different set of eyes. So I want to thank you guys for the support. We've done 420 episodes. Alex and I got a chuckle at that. I know there's some of you that have been with us for almost all of them. So I really appreciate it. It means a lot to me. I know you guys have a lot of options. I just have a small ask, you know, either if you could either join our patron group, which I use to raise funds for a great charity and pay our contributors. I don't make money off it. If you consider doing that, if for whatever reason you don't want to do that, that's perfectly fine. But please support the show. You can do that by leaving a review, giving us 5 stars on iTunes, tweeting about it, and I'll really appreciate it. So thank you so much for the support, and I hope everyone has a great weekend.